You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Hello and welcome to the Dr. Kristen Lyerly Show. It's me, Dr. Kristen Lyerly. And let's get this party started. What do you think, Abe?
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's spring break for my oldest son, and it's apparently bring your child to work day. You know how child care is these days.
Just to clarify, I'm a teacher.
You're an adult.
Not in college, not in high school. Spring break means a little bit of a different thing at this point in my life.
Yeah. How is that? I mean, it's totally different when you're in high school, when you're in college, and now you're a grown up and you're a teacher. And
well, right now, let me just say, in changing your spring break schedule to go to Easter is a brilliant plan until Easter is at the very end of April. And then the kids are crawling up the wall. The teachers are losing their minds. It's a relief to say the least at this point. It's a relief. I don't know if there's much more beyond it at that point.
But let's just point out that we are taping on the first day of the draft. Mm-hmm. So
excited. It couldn't have lined up better.
Uh-huh.
It was a road to get here, though.
You got lucky.
It was a little exhausting. But we're here.
We're here.
No place we'd rather be.
Uh-huh. And we're here to talk about Gen Z stuff. Mm-hmm. Because we, in our house, so you are the oldest of four brothers. You are all members of Gen Z, although different times in Gen Z, because your youngest brother is 10 years younger than you. Mm-hmm. And we have some really fascinating conversations. And sometimes, often, we learn a lot from each other because we see things from such different perspectives.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you did a little bit of footwork with your friends and your brothers.
Yeah, just talking to people that are around the same age that I am and sort of... So I'm 25, 26 in a couple of days, but 25 right now, which means I'm right at the very end of millennials, right at the very start of Gen Z. It's not the most settled age group to be in. It doesn't feel like there's a strong sense of identity either way. But I, mm-hmm. you know, importantly, growing up with the internet, growing up with social media, like Instagram came out when I was sixth grade, fifth grade, mm-hmm. and never not having a life that was online mm-hmm. feels like the big separation between millennial and Gen Z for me.
Yeah.
And I feel like I land very safely in the latter category. I've never known a life that's not uh-huh. very connected.
Well, the thing about Gen Z is that so much stuff happened in that short period of time, especially technology.
Absolutely.
So that was like smartphones and the internet really taking off and all the social media stuff. And so... your experience, because you were like an early, it was there, but it wasn't quite as developed. So for your brothers, it's just always been there and that's a normal yeah. thing for them. But for you, you still were kind of in that, like, let's see how this turns out.
And the user experience has gotten a lot better on a lot of social media. It was the Wild West back in 2011, a lot of back end stuff, a lot of going into programs and putting them back together and sort of having to learn on the spot how these different things worked. And now it's a lot of swiping. Right. It's very easy. It's very cushy, very padded. And it's sort of changed how we interact with technology. Mm-hmm. Like the kids that I teach. So I teach Gen Alpha students. Mm-hmm. All of my kids were born at this point, 2014, 2015. I'm teaching 11-year-olds, 10-year-olds. And their understanding of technology is so different from what I had at that age.
Yeah.
And their use case for technology is so different than I think of it. It's almost entirely used as a form of entertainment. There's very little ability to understand how to interact with something like Google beyond just typing something in and taking the first AI response that's given to you. There's this sort of technical literacy that I think we had all just sort of assumed mm-hmm. would, as you know, as it becomes more part of your life, you're going to get skills for this. But as it's become part of our life, some really smart people have figured out how to work around the skills that you need
right.
to get
and
this.
Just give you the easiest thing. It makes me think of, I'm going to go total Gen X here. It makes me think of when I was in elementary school and we would be doing like arithmetic mm-hmm. and we'd want to use a calculator. And the teacher would say, no, you have to do it with your pencil and paper so that you know how to do it. And we'd be like, yeah, but the calculator.
Yeah, but I mean, there's still value in the calculator because you are still physically putting in those numbers and you're deciding the function from it. And then mm-hmm. you're taking the result. Like, yes, it is a tool. And I can see that argument. But there's a difference between that and every interaction being boiled down to one movement or one.
Yeah. So do you think that people can interpret it that way, that they understand what the pitfalls are? I remember when Wikipedia first came out and people were using it in like research papers, and there was a danger because it's, you know, crowdsourced and you don't really know who's actually adding that information. So Wikipedia was not considered to be a legitimate reference, but now it is.
Depending on
Mostly.
How you use it.
Depending on how you use it.
It's one of those, if you're smart about it, if you go in and you dive to the sources and primarily use the sources, it makes sense. But yeah, I mean, that was a big scary thing that I remember when I was growing up, just the amount of concern over, are you using Wikipedia?
Uh-huh.
You're not going to cite just a Wikipedia source. Look at the sources.
Uh-huh.
Like, they definitely remember that.
We had that conversation in medical school. Mm-hmm. I remember they sat us down and they said two things. And this was like at the beginning of the iPhone. Mm-hmm. Wikipedia is not a great resource. You have to go deeper if you actually want to use it. And be wary of your social media presence, because whatever Absolutely. You put out there, it could come back to haunt you. Because that wasn't, you know, we didn't know. Like, we didn't grow up with that.
Yeah.
We didn't have that same kind of trail.
That advice has held up really well, actually.
Yeah.
Not putting too much online has held up really well.
Oh, this is Kristen Lierley with the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show. I am with my oldest son, Abe, who also was my campaign manager when mm-hmm. I ran for assembly. He's also a public school teacher, and he's a musician.
Yep. Double bassist, playing a lot of guitar these days. Anything that lets me move around and keep the kids from touching each other in the classroom. Hard to do that while stuck at a piano.
You were brilliant, by the way, at Thanksgiving when we had little kids over and they were running all over the place and you just got the guitar out and you went full teacher. And all of the adults in the room were like, wow, this is cool.
I know how to make groups of 5 to 25 kids listen. Anything beyond
teach me that. All right, so you talked with a bunch of people in your world yeah. about some of the things that are happening in Gen Z life. Mm-hmm. Tell us what.
Well, not even Gen Z life. I think just setting the scene a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
It's become confusing to a lot of people that I've talked to. It's become a real area of concern and an area, an area of focus for a lot of people
mm-hmm.
on how Gen Z people are getting their information, what their trusted media sources are, and how they process that information. And what sort of, I guess the buzzword that people like to use is media literacy. Because
mm-hmm.
we just talked about Wikipedia. Growing up, that was the big media literacy battle for me was, you know, can you identify if this is a primary, secondary, tertiary source? And beyond that, can you explain why you believe that it's factual? Why you how can you confirm that this is real information that you're presenting to me?
That you can trust it.
That you can trust it. And that's become, although the idea of how we teach it hasn't changed, you know, we definitely still focus on media literacy in school. We mm-hmm. talk about Wikipedia. We talk about citing sources. But it feels like we have built a dam and for a very specific amount of water, and it holds that amount of water more or less okay. We certainly weren't knocking it out of the park with misinformation before advent of generative AI and TikTok, but now it feels like there is this huge crushing wave coming at you where no matter what you're doing, there's information flying at you, and oftentimes faster than you can actually check it. You know, if it takes 2 minutes to do a fact check and you're going through short form videos, you're through, you know, 3 or 4 videos by the time you would have had to do one fact check. And as much as I like to think that there are people on this earth who sit down and open up TikTok and see a video and then immediately go into the description and
uh-huh.
try to dig through it, I can tell you that's not most people. And a lot, and even if you are the sort of person who's like getting to the next video, you'll get a claim or two that just gets thrown at you.
Uh-huh. And sometimes you just don't process it.
Sometimes you do and you're not aware of it. And it just sits with you a little bit and you start thinking about it. And that can be totally made up unless you're confirming it. There's just this huge volume.
Mm-hmm.
So I reached out to a couple of my friends. I talked to my little brothers and just tried to get an idea of what sorts of content people are seeing, where people are getting their information, be that social media, be that influencers, be that traditional media outlets like the Associated Press, AP, Fox News, you know, anything that's on cable. And the big takeaway that I found from talking to everyone in my age range was very few people read or watch cable news. Very few people follow official stories.
So you're talking about like CNN, Fox News, MSNBC, those sources. Gen Z doesn't turn to that.
I'm telling you, if you can find me a Gen Z person who's sitting down and watching Morning Joe, nothing against them. It's a great program, but
it's just not what you do.
It's not the format that people have built their lives around. It's why would you schedule your Sunday mornings for that if you could get that information, you know, scattered throughout your day? It feels like people aren't scheduling this stuff in, and I mean, not feels like they aren't.
So it's no longer. So when I was growing up, it was the evening news.
Yeah.
And you had the local news and then the national news, and people watched. I mean, this was before my time, but it's the classic example is Walter Cronkite or, you know, Tom Brokaw.
The sort of the figure of somebody cigarette in their hand giving you the factual news for the day.
But that doesn't happen anymore. Yeah, right. Or even like Meet the Press, like the Sunday morning news shows. It's you're saying that the news that you get is mostly delivered on your phone?
Yeah. So from everyone that I talked to, almost every piece of information that they were getting was generally either served up to them on social media. So a lot of people that I know are still browsing Facebook, even though many of them won't admit it. Lots of people will go on Marketplace and get stuck.
Gen Z is on Facebook. Let's be clear.
Just a little bit. Just a little bit. But Facebook, any sort of short form video, people will say that they're not on Facebook and then they'll spend an hour on Reels. But, you know, most of the information that people are getting is coming in through these trusted influencers, people oftentimes who have been around for a long time. I'm talking not just, you know, a fresh-faced 21-year-old kid telling you about the war in Gaza. I'm talking about people that have been around for a long time. You know, Jon Stewart. I'm talking about John Oliver, all the Johns apparently. But like, and on the right too, like there's been this, it's the same sort of people that have long been in this sort of talk radio show bubble.
Almost like the new version of Rush Limbaugh.
It feels like it's the same sort of characters, the same sort of personalities, but they can compress themselves much more easily into this short form video and deliver a punch of a message. And that is how people are consuming their media these days. It's not sitting down and listening on your commute. It's, this is the person that I trust. Here's the 1 minute long bit of information trying to push to me.
Yeah. Okay. When we come back from this short break, we are going to talk more about Gen Z and maybe the loss of opportunity that Gen Z sees for the future.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. So can't come wait. On back. All right. This is Dr. Kristen Lierley. You're listening to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back. I am Dr. Kristen Lierley. This is the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show, and I'm here with my number one son.
Hello, hello.
That's the rating and the age.
The rating and the age. All right, I'll take that one home. Tell everyone else.
Although my favorite son is whoever I happen to be talking to at the time.
Whoever happens to have cleaned the house last.
Which is no one.
Which is no ever. One. Oh my God, that place.
Abe is also my former campaign manager when I ran for assembly. He is a public school teacher. He's on spring break, so he's joining us today to help us decode Gen Z and understand Gen Z a little bit better, which is fun because we've got to have these conversations. I think we all live in our little rabbit holes, and we've got our friends who tend to be our same ages and our same so many things. So reaching out and having these conversations just helps us get each other.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. But before we get into that, I wanted to highlight one of the things I love about doing this show, because it's so northeastern Wisconsin, is that I can highlight some of the local beautiful music that happens here.
So who are we just listening to there?
The Chocolatiers. Yeah, they've been around for a very long time. They are an alternative group. They played the draft. They're playing a big event in Hinterland on May 24th. You can find them all over, really all over the state, but they pretty much pop up in Green Bay, I don't know, weekly basis-ish.
All right.
Yeah. And you
so
can there'll
become, be opportunities.
Oh, for sure. And you can become part of the Chaco family anytime.
That's what they call it?
Yeah. Why not?
Stop by Sarugi's too, you know?
And
seems
music,
like a party.
It always is. It always is. Music has been a huge part of our lives. You are a musician. You're a music teacher.
Mm-hmm.
So that was your opportunity.
Opportunity for?
A job.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's talk about that. Like, what does Gen Z see as they are becoming adults? They're adults now. You are adults.
Well, yeah, we are adults. The oldest Gen Zs are out of college or have been in the workforce for a couple of years now, solid 5 years. A lot of people just now are graduating from graduate programs, looking for jobs. And I think that this is something that's been, you know, well looked at, but there's this sort of, this almost pervasive lack of hope that's going on right now. And that's been going on for a long time. For the past, you know, decade, it's been feeling like no matter what happens, when you get out into the job market, it's harder and harder to find a job that pays or has the same opportunities for advancement that previous generations might have had. Factual or unfactual, that's just been an ongoing sentiment. And it's been sort of compounding and building and building. And then within these past couple of months, there's been this sort of huge shift there where, you know, it's already been difficult to get a job. It's been difficult to sort of find a place that will pay you enough to live on, especially as the cost of food and housing and everything that, you know, it takes to continue to be a living, breathing human being goes up.
And the benefits.
And the benefits.
The benefits have changed so much.
The benefits have changed so much, and they're getting more and more complicated every time you switch insurance.
Yeah, well, and even to look at, I think about health insurance, when what it was like when I first entered the workforce and what it's like for you.
Yeah.
And it, like, it actually covered my healthcare expenses when I was a young adult. And that's not the case for most young adults.
No, it's really difficult to find a job that both pays you enough to continue to eat and sleep and with a roof over your head and also, you know, covers you if you get hurt. But there's been this sort of this feeling that no matter what happens, even if you're getting a good deal, it doesn't feel like you can move from that. And in these past couple of months, what I've heard from my friends, many of whom are graduating college at this point and are just starting to look for jobs in teaching or are starting to look for jobs in various academic fields, is this severe uncertainty. And I think that as you go through college and these higher education programs right now, the supports are shaking, the institutions themselves are shaking, and you can feel that in the college when you show up for class and the teacher's out for the day because they're in an emergency meeting because they're not sure if they have funding anymore. Or like there are all these small indications as you're going through your day that this institution is not operating at full capability.
I see this with some of Julian's friends too, who didn't go to college and they took jobs out of high school and they feel very stuck. And if they, and they tend to change jobs because it's unsatisfying. So he has a few friends who have had like four or five different jobs in the, what, 3 years since they graduated from high school.
Well, and often.
Because nothing actually meets their needs.
Well, nothing meets your needs. And if it's an entry-level job where there's no progress, I mean, at that point, it's like, it feels much more like if I can't move forward and I'm going to get the same amount of pay somewhere else. Why stick around? If this is not a fulfilling job and I'm going to be and there's no penalty or punishment or lack of, if I'm not losing out on any advancement opportunities, I could just move.
Hey, I'm talking with my oldest son, Abe Lyerly,
about
Gen Z stuff. And specifically, we're talking about a perceived lack of opportunity.
Well, and I think it's more than perceived at this point, especially people who are coming out of college right now and are looking for jobs in higher education, who are looking for jobs in research fields. In the past 3 months, it has become very clear that there is going to be, when I was talking to people, they didn't want to use the word attack. Like, it doesn't feel like, you know, there's a government coming after you, but it feels like there is a government that is very willing to shake the tree and see what falls out to achieve its goals. In the people that I talked to, nobody was willing to say that they felt that there was a plan so much as there
Like a grand plan?
Like a, or
I guess, like a plan for their lives.
No. I mean, like a grand plan for the tree shaking.
Uh-huh. For the chaos that's happening.
It feels like there's an idea of what you want to get out of the tree shaking,
and
it feels
like there's a plan.
It feels like there's a concept of what you want, mm-hmm. and you recognize I have these two hands and these arms that are strong enough to shake this tree.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just gets mapped out. You start shaking the tree.
Uh-huh.
It doesn't feel like. Of everyone that I talk to who is looking for a job right now, almost all universities are on a hiring freeze. Personally, my girlfriend was on her third interview for a job in San Francisco for the San Francisco Conservatory of Music. And they just ghosted her for 2 months and then sent a message saying, I'm sorry, you know, we wanted to keep this going. We were going to fly you out. But right now, we don't know if we can hire you. We don't know what our budget's going to be. We don't know if we're going to face demands from the government. And we don't know what that's going to look like or how we'll solve them. So right now we're in this period where even these opportunities that the companies and that employers are trying to put out there and feel like they can grow towards, suddenly we're not sure if there's going to be growth.
Mm-hmm.
We're not sure what we can do to make that happen anymore.
I'm definitely seeing that in research, scientific research, mm-hmm. medical research, people who have been trained to do a certain thing, and that is their entire life. And mm-hmm. that research is what the foundation of our lives are built on.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden it's gone. So what do you do when you're a PhD in, mm-hmm. you know, marine biology?
And you're $100,000 in debt coming right. out the other side. But I mean, even more than that, you're more connected to people in that field than I am. Do you feel that that everyone is afraid or only a certain amount of people are afraid? Because I'm getting this sense right now that because there is very little direction and the entire tree is shaking,
uh-huh.
that even people who don't feel like they are directly involved are still feeling a little bit like, am I next?
Yeah.
What's happening?
I think everyone is feeling uncomfortable mm-hmm. right now. And I completely understand why you acknowledge a loss of hope for the future.
Mm-hmm.
But I also feel that we can build that together by mm-hmm. supporting each other in our communities. That's the one place where we really can make a difference. So we'll talk more about that. And when we come back from this segment, we are going to talk about Gen Z and where they lie along political lines.
Oh, God.
That'll be interesting. This is Dr. Kristen Lierley. You're listening to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show with me and Abe. So let's make love like a couple of 90s kids in the back of a Cadillac at the end of a dead end road on a Saturday night. And let's get drunk like a couple of teenage kids in the back of a Cadillac. Welcome back to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show. I am Dr. Kristen Lierley, here with my oldest son, Abe.
Hello, hello.
And if you missed the beginning of our conversation, you can always find it wherever you get your podcasts. And you can always find me here on Saturdays and Sundays at 3 p.m. on WGBW and WISS and streaming on the Civic Media app. Do you use the Civic Media app, Abe?
I do use the Civic Media app.
I love it.
It works really well.
It does.
In a world of apps that don't work very well at all, it's an app that works really well.
Yeah, I enjoy it. That's pretty good. This is how I know you're a Gen Z person, because you listen to streaming things on your phone.
Is that the marker of a Gen Z person?
No. Can we just take a minute and talk about Gen Z vocabulary?
Sure.
Skibbity?
So you are... This is actually incorrect. I'm going to have to fact check you here. That's Gen Alpha slang.
Oh, hell. Okay.
Yeah. So right now, the stuff that you are hearing coming out of our middle schools, don't put that on me.
Okay.
that's not my fault. Those aren't my people. It's a new generation of slang. Gen Z was more of the yeet, swag, dank stuff.
Oh, okay.
It was obnoxious.
Cringe
was... fairly Gen Z. Yeah.
Drip?
Drip was Gen Z.
Can I say these things?
I don't see why not.
Okay. Is it
do
like...
Do you feel comfortable saying these things? Because you look uncomfortable saying these things.
Well, what I've learned as a Gen Xer who has a lot of my old clothes that I've just kept because I just don't like throwing things away is that if
I've
it
seen
was...
the wigs.
We do
whole Kiss cover band in there.
Yeah, we got a great dress up box. But if you wore it fashionably the first time and then it comes back a second time, you probably shouldn't wear it again.
You should sell it to the Gen Z person for, you know, $200. take the cash.
this is a business opportunity.
It's okay. A real business opportunity. But no, that's all Gen Alpha slang that you're saying. The Ohio skibbity riz.
Oh, yeah.
Stuff. It's a lot of actually sort of following where these came from, like the almost nomenclature of mm-hmm. these references. It feels so different along generational lines, but also so similar.
Yeah. Everybody's got that. We had Valley Girls.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God.
Gag me with a spoon.
Stop trying to make fetch happen. And just seeing that a lot of it, and with the middle school students that I work with, there's so much of it that comes from these short form videos and mm-hmm. a lot of these references that you'll hear, or I say you'll hear, I'm projecting, that I hear nonstop, day in, day out. A lot of them come from these short form videos. It's a lot of just like throwaway lines that end up in a TikTok video that go mega viral. And you just have kids saying 6-7 because somebody in a video said it with an interesting cadence once.
Oh.
And it got stuck in their heads.
6-7.
I don't know what it means either. You could have just quoted something horrible. I could have led you right into that.
We can cut that later. All right. Let's switch gears and talk about something that's really been on my mind lately.
Yeah.
Politics.
Oh, really? You haven't been just floating blissfully through the stream like the rest of us?
Yeah, I know. So looking back to 2024, we were all looking at Gen Z thinking, these are young people. We need to get them out to vote because they tend to vote for progressives.
Those we had that Obama era interpretation of how the Democratic coalition worked.
But that's not what happened.
No, it's so not what happened at all.
Talk to me.
So this is something that I have talked to a lot of people about, actually recently at the hands-off protests. Mm-hmm. There was one that happened recently in Milwaukee. And just talking to a lot of the people that were there, there is this genuine sense of confusion and almost like everyone's trying to get their hands around the idea of why did young men go so far to the right
mm-hmm.
and young women not so far to the left, but, you know, sizably to the left in comparison.
Yeah.
And it's a mystery that I think that is the narrative that is defining this past election, that and, you know, the price of eggs. But I don't know. You were listening to.
Yeah, I was listening to The Run-Up, which is a New York Times podcast.
Fantastic podcast.
It's a great podcast. And I was listening to an old episode where they were at a Badger game and they were tailgating and talking to different groups of tailgaters. And the women consistently were concerned about abortion and reproductive freedom, which makes sense because for women, that's existential.
Yeah. That is, you can't live without it.
Right. And there were two groups of men. There were the men who said, you know, I understand my mom, my girlfriend, my sisters, like I stand with them. Mm-hmm. And then there were the guys who were like, I don't think that's a big deal. And I need to be more masculine. I like to follow a more masculine image. Mm-hmm. Where does that come from? How do they get fed that?
So a lot of it falls to the almighty algorithm.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there is a lot of overlap between the sort of swing to the right and hypermasculinity, and also it along gender lines. I know that personally, the algorithms that I have on my short form videos will try to lead me down these sort of hypermasculine rabbit holes. And every once in a while, you go down them a little bit, and then almost immediately, Andrew Tate shows up.
Really?
Or Joe Rogan shows up. Like, they sort of, it sort of seeds the ground.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not sure, you know, I'd be making a lot more money if I could tell you why that's happening.
I'd be making a lot more money. But it just pops into your algorithm.
But it's sort of seeded. Yeah, it's almost like a, you know, two follows one situation. It's just along the line. It tries to feed you stuff that thinks that you'll engage with, and it's been mostly successful. But women don't get those suggestions.
Mm-mm. I get cats. I get a lot of cats.
A lot of cats, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I get makeup.
Mm-hmm. I don't get any of that. Mm-hmm. I get MMA for some reason. I'm not a huge MMA fan. It just pops up.
Oh.
And then a lot of cooking videos.
And
then Joe Rogan talking about something. And it's always something a little, not even innocent. It's completely off subject for a while.
Uh-huh.
It's those influencers. It sort of acclimates you to them. As we talked about at the very top of the show, a lot of information comes through trusted influencers.
Mm-hmm.
And these influencers don't get trusted by, you know, showing up in the first thing they say and the 1 minute they have your attention is, you know, the evil demoncrats are eating the babies for their adrenochrome. Like, that's not the first thing that you hear.
It's further down the rabbit hole.
Being dudes. It's people having a good time and they're drinking a beer and they're having a conversation. And it's, you know, it is a good vibe. It seems like people that you would want to just sit around and have a conversation with.
Mm-hmm.
And as you sort of fall into that, it slowly pushes towards more political areas.
Mm-hmm.
And those same people that it introduced you to then become trusted resources for you. You know, it's these are the people that you listen to.
So it's like a slippery slope.
It feels like a slippery slope.
Mm-hmm. Hey, I'm talking with my oldest son, Abe Lyerly, here, mm-hmm. about the gender divide in Gen Z in politics. Mm-hmm. And we're really seeing it in what's happening now as the Democrats, especially, like, everybody is struggling to figure out their identity. And, you know, here in Wisconsin, the Republican Party is wondering why they are losing statewide races. And how do we, everybody wants to identify with people better.
Yeah.
But we all seem to be trying to figure out how to win them over without, like, really winning them over.
Like, what's the quick and easy way?
Yeah.
To win the next election and not have to think about it.
Right. Well, I'm looking at some of the work that David Hogg is doing. So David Hogg is one of the shooting in Florida.
Yeah, Parkland. He's a survivor from Parkland.
Yes.
He's been very involved for a long time. Are you talking about his recent almost threat?
Yeah, it wasn't an almost threat.
It was out and out.
Right. There is a pretty progressive version of the Democratic Party that wants to be more progressive and feels that the Democrats are really, by using the superficial messaging, they're missing out on this, like, fundamental potential for real change. And David Hogg is really embracing this by saying, I am going to encourage future candidates to challenge the status quo and to go deeper. And that's really shaking up the party.
Yeah. And I think he's doing it in a more targeted way than is generally captured through headlines.
Mm-hmm.
He's not threatening to oust general election incumbents. He's not supporting, you know, it's not this. I've seen it reported many times as, like, this big, you know, someone's coming in and shaking the whole party up and everything's up in the air. But I think that it gets to what a lot of young people really want to see. And it's something that we've seen on the right for a long time, which is a fight.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're taking from the perspective of, I mean, young men, young women, they're taking rights away that we have had and have been locked in. And in return, we're seeing, you know, we just had a man with no due process get sent to El Salvador, not one man, but, you know, 200 men.
Mm-hmm.
And then you see
More than that.
And then you see people like Gavin Newsom saying, oh, it's a distraction. Like, we can't be so politically targeted. It can't, everything can't be a political decision. These are mm-hmm. human decisions.
Yeah.
And people can smell that. You know, when you say this is a distraction, no, it's not. That is a direct challenge to the entire contract that our nation lives under.
Yeah.
We can't just ignore that.
It's almost like, what is the message? Something that you're putting together because of polling results, or is it something that you're doing because it's the right thing to do?
Well, and you said earlier, David Hogg was pushing more progressive members, and he definitely is.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I don't know if there's necessarily this huge appetite for progressivism as much as there's an appetite for saying, absolutely not.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's nothing progressive about saying, you know, maybe the Constitution should guarantee due rights. That's mm-hmm. basic.
Maybe it does, actually.
Yeah. No, that's not progressive. That's American.
Yeah.
So maybe there's not necessarily this deep groundswell for progressivism, which I definitely think is on the rise. And there's definitely a lot of support for it. You see it in the AOC and the Bernie rallies. But I think it's more about, it doesn't matter how progressive you are if you're not willing to throw a punch right now.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not willing to get out there, if you're not willing to, you know, do what Chris Van Hollen did and head down to El Salvador and really put your money where your mouth is, there's not a lot of positive feeling among Democrats right now. There's not a lot of positive feeling among young people.
And I find that when I talk with people of all stripes, like all different political mm-hmm. feelings, that there are so many things that we all have in common. And when you're talking about jobs and healthcare and opportunities and all of those things, people are, we want the same things, but mm-hmm. it's the labels.
Yeah.
Because we are taught through media, through the short form media especially.
And to the people that we trust.
Yes. That either you're a Republican or a Democrat, either you like AOC or you think she's a demon, either, you know, and some of the things that Bernie Sanders has been saying the same thing for decades, literally decades.
I always worth it to go and watch some of his old interactions. There's one where his old public access TV show it's aged very well. It has this sort of like slapstick comedy routine to it sometimes, where he's like talking to kids, and Bernie Sanders does not know how to talk to kids. He's like trying to do a dare program with them. He offers a 5-year-old cocaine. The 5-year-old's confused. The cameraman's confused. Bernie Sanders doesn't know what he's doing. It's great video. Great video.
To be clear, he's trying to not.
He's not trying. He's not trying to get a 5-year-old hooked on cocaine. But that's not necessarily what comes across.
But he is trying to address the needs of the people and all of those fundamental things that, whether you voted for Donald Trump or Kamala Harris or just chose to not vote because you felt overwhelmed, those are issues that are not being addressed by the greater parties. And absolutely, some of the things that some of the more innovative thinkers are really trying to dig into.
Well, and I think what we're seeing right now is this feeling of nobody has tried to move. We've had these issues that have not been addressed for so long, and now we're desperate for anything, no matter how outlandish. Put 240% tariffs on China. Mm-hmm. Bring manufacturing. Will it do that? It won't. No one can make a plan around it. But we're desperate enough now. You know, people are voting for someone to throw a punch, even if they're punching themselves in the face.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah.
Somebody throw a punch.
I mean, when Elon Musk came to Green Bay and was giving $1 million checks away, did you ever think you would see the day when someone was trying to literally buy your vote in the most obvious way possible?
I got to be real. The thing that surprised me the most about all that was the amount of people that showed up to that protest, the thousands of people that showed up and just lined Green Bay. I've never thought of Green Bay as a place where that sort of thing happens. I love Green Bay, but in my interpretation of Green Bay, it's this beautiful area with a great football team and a great community spirit. Mm-hmm. But there's not a lot of people who want to talk about politics, and I get that. But it felt like people came out and were ready and willing to talk. And that's what surprised me the most. The Elon Musk thing, disgusting. Mm-hmm. But the amount of people came out.
And people were disgusted by that. Like, regular people saw that and saw right through it. And it was just disrespectful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there's in an era of so much disrespect.
So the things that we don't talk about here in Green Bay are politics and sex and religion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No disagreement there.
So we need to take a break again, but we've got one more segment.
In a very Green Bay fashion. We're not talking about those either.
No, we are, because I want to get your take on the Pope. Mm. And I definitely want to talk more about the protests that you've been involved in, I've been involved
in.
They've been beautiful. They've been peaceful. We've been collecting food and taking care of each other.
Picking up trash on the side of the highway. It's been great.
I know. It's so cool. So that's what we're going to talk about when we come back from this short break. This is Dr. Kristen Lierley with Abe, and you're listening to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Hello and welcome back to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show. I am Dr. Kristen Lierley, here with my oldest son, Abe.
Hello, hello.
And as promised, we're going to talk about sex, politics, and religion now.
Sure. I just have to say this. I'm trying to stay, but in radio, it used to be sex, drugs, and rock and roll. So if you can, you know, keep it on that level, that'd be
Welcome
great.
Welcome back to the Howard Stern Show.
That'll be our next episode.
Okay, good.
So I'm a gynecologist, so we talk about sex all the time. Also, you're my oldest son, and it makes it a little awkward. So we're going to skip that. But religion. Mm-hmm. So you're baptized Catholic. I grew up Catholic. What's your take on the loss of the Pope?
First off, not the person that. my opinion on the death of the Pope is inconsequential in the long run. But in terms of who he was as a person and what he brought to the world, it's a real loss.
Yeah.
In terms of, he had a sort of moral clarity about him in his messaging that was hard to ignore.
Yeah.
Sometimes it was easy to pan it as being simplistic or it was ignored, but you know, there was always somebody out there saying, treat each other well.
Yes.
There's always somebody out there saying what should be obvious, but you know, so often in really hard times is not obvious. And that's a real loss that we don't have that anymore. And it feels like everything has sort of been peeling that away.
Yeah. And I think as Catholics, technically, he was the leader of our faith, but also he's recognized as a leader in the world. Yeah. And so much of his message just applies to everybody. And so, yeah, I agree with you. Thanks for sharing that little tidbit.
Yeah, we'll have to see what comes next, but it feels like in a world that's so unstable, he was really somebody who consistently had the same approach and you could count on, and now a little bit more instability in an already unstable world.
Yeah, which makes the stuff that we're doing that much more important. And I want to talk about that, the protests.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're everywhere.
And they are huge.
They're huge. And and people are engaged. You know, you hear the messaging from the right saying that these are paid protesters. And, you know, there may be some paid protesters in some places, but I can tell you in the places where I've been, including when I was in Hibbing, Minnesota last weekend, and I was just driving down the street and there were hundreds of people on all the street corners. And I pulled over and just started talking to these folks. And they were holding Ukraine flags and reproductive rights flags and immigration flags. It was so encouraging, inspiring to have these conversations.
It's so nice to just get out and have a conversation with real people.
Yeah.
There's to talk face to face about truly held beliefs and know absolutely this is not a robot that's trying to make me mad.
You know, like happens on social media.
5 years ago, it was a lot less of a concern, but these days it feels a lot like I'm just arguing with robots online. But no, there's a real sense of community out there, and it's fun. You know, people are bringing drums, people are partying. It's a lot of people who don't agree on everything, sometimes agree on very little, but everyone agrees that what's happening right now is unsustainable. And they're out there, they are in the streets. They're having a great time, and it's really nice just to get out there and talk and shout and wait. All the shouting that you've been holding inside, all the like screams you let out into your pillow. It's actually socially acceptable to go yell those out in the street,
even into a megaphone.
Even into a megaphone, they let you do it. Yeah, it's a very
nice,
good time.
Be nice with your language.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, don't get it taken away. Don't ruin it for everyone else.
Yeah, maybe bring an item of food to donate. That's another thing that I've really loved seeing is some of the community organizing around helping out our neighbors. And another form of protest that we've been seeing is these empty chair town halls when our actual representatives are not showing up because they're afraid, but other people are showing up. And what we're seeing, and we saw this in Shawano a couple weeks ago, is community members were sharing their fears and their concerns, and other community members were saying, what about this? Or maybe we can connect you with that. Or what if we got together and tried this?
When there is no... When the representative doesn't show up and it's just the protesters there, first off, it's disappointing, but there's also this really beautiful community that builds that blooms in that spot where everyone who is upset is suddenly able to talk to other people who feel the same way. And I don't think that it necessarily helps these representatives in the way that they think that it does when they don't show up, because they lose any ability to answer their own questions or to control the situation, and the organizing spirals beyond them.
Right.
And I just wanted to say, if you are somebody who is not politically engaged, if you are somebody who has these feelings and this sense that things are going wrong, first off, it's a lovely time to go to these protests. Truly. You don't have to.
Yeah.
We're talking about these food drives, everything. You don't have to bring a sign. You have to bring food. Show up, high five some people, have a short conversation, go get a taco afterwards. Have a good time.
Right. Yes.
But beyond that, it's talking to my friends and all the prep that I did for the show, one of the things that's really been out there, because you'll hear a lot of people saying, you know, peaceful protest doesn't do anything. Only the voting matters. They're seeing these clips, the clip of Boston with 100,000 people out there. You know, these things they're showing up on social media. They're showing up in the news. It doesn't matter where you are. They are actually making their way to people, to the point where you'll see people complaining like, I can't get the protests off my feed. How do I get rid of them? Like, it's getting to these people who do not want to see anything. It's one of the few things I can say that actually has done that.
I think it has made a difference. This is Dr. Kristen Lyerly. We're listening to, we're talking with my oldest son, Abe, on
Hopefully
the Dr. Kristen.
Listening.
We are definitely listening. I always listen to you. I so respect your opinions. And I'm so proud to be your mom. Mother's Day's coming up.
Do we have tissues? She's crying.
There are some around someplace.
I've got some notebook paper.
I'll go grab some toilet paper out of the bathroom.
He's got his notes on a Scrabble notepad.
It's a scribble notepad, all right?
It's good.
I stole this from you.
Oh, I stole this from you, Mom. No, but I think you're right. I think especially, and to get back to our Gen Z topic, younger folks have spent so much of their life online having that very two-dimensional conversation, but to actually be present with other people.
And also, I think having been to a lot of protests, there are a lot that have younger people there, but it's been overwhelmingly older people that I've seen, and it's still reaching.
Yeah.
The actions of a few are reaching deep into our culture. People can see this stuff. It's not just a couple people standing on a bridge.
Yeah.
It's a reminder that you're not alone.
It's a reminder that you're not alone.
Mm-hmm. And that matters.
It does matter. Abe, thanks for hanging out today.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Come back, please. And hey, I want to hear from you too. Send me ideas for topics, guests, music, you name it. This is our conversation and we can talk about whatever we want. So thank you again for listening. If you missed any of our conversation, you can always find it wherever you get your podcasts. See you next time. Will my eyes close in the daylight? And you told me you lost me in there. The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.